Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 386 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 27th of July, 2018, as I record this. So today I'm talking to Christopher Downing about foolproof dictation, a topic I know many of you are fascinated with. And whether you have tried dictation and want to revisit it, or if you know you want to give it a go, but you've struggled, then Christopher has some different ways of looking at it today. So we're actually going to get straight into the personal update today because I have quite a long one again, because I do my management accounts every year. Obviously, for the tax year, you need to do your accounting, and I measure my money regularly. Obviously, I run a business, it pays the bills, so I constantly check my bank accounts. But what I don't do is check all my book sales reports regularly. I really don't do that. So and I know, don't do what I do. Do what I say. Of course, you should track your book sales more regularly than I do, but I pay more attention to money than volume. But basically, once a year, I do reporting on how the year has gone, and I do a breakdown of all the sales and, income. And I break it down by format, genre, vendor, country, author name, and I post that. Now, I have a timeline which has all of these posts from the last few years. If you go to thecreativepen.com/timeline, you'll see links to all of these posts. So if you're interested, you can have a look at how my last 10 years have gone. But also thanks to Russell Phillips, listener to the show, patron of the show, and also virtual assistant at Author Help. And there's a link to Russell on the show notes and the blog post for this. Because basically, when you're wide, if you're exclusive on Amazon, it can be very easy to do your sales figures regularly because you just look on Book Report, which is just fantastic. But if you are wide like I am and you're using all kinds of different platforms, it can be difficult to do your reports. So Russell collated everything for me. And basically, what I'm going to discuss is all based on revenue. So I have split my revenue, that is income, not profit. This is not an accounting discussion today. This is more an interesting management accounts version, which is things that help you make decisions on a management level rather than, you know, actual financial things. So what I did is I took, Russell, I asked him what to look at, but basically took all of the revenue and then split it. And that's what we're going to talk about. So as just to be clear, many of you guys support the show on Patreon. Obviously, I make other income. I have courses. I have affiliate income. So I have multiple streams of income. I've talked about that many times before. Book sales, affiliate sales, course sales, sponsorship, advertising revenue, and Patreon. And all of that is documented in How to Make a Living with Your Writing, which is a little book. So you can check that out if you want to know more about how I make money. But as a whole, the Creative Pen Limited is up 8%, which is not hugely significant growth, but hey, it's going in the right direction. But what's interesting is my book sales income from this year to last has remained about the same. And I don't give exact numbers because that's not appropriate online, but I do tell you that it is about three times the UK national average income for book sales. Definitely a lot more than the recent Guardian reports from the ALCS survey of the average British author making around £10,500, which is around $12,000. So basically, I do much better than most authors in the UK, but I know I do a lot less than many of the breakout successes on KDP. So what I would say is, obviously, we don't like comparisonitis, but it's very hard not to go down that route sometimes. But to encourage you, however you choose to go, I mean, I obviously choose wide, I choose to be quite eclectic in my writing, but we'll come back to that. But I have never had a breakout success. I have just consistently worked hard for 10 years, well, a bit more than 10 years, really. I started writing in 2016, but this business has been going for 10 years now. And you definitely do not need to be a household name to make a decent living with your writing. So yes, I make more than some authors. I make less than some authors. That is life. But in terms of the breakdown, so let's start with breakdown by vendor. And all the graphs are on the, there'll be a link in the show notes. But essentially, Amazon KDP, and remember, this is book sales revenue in total. So Amazon KDP is at 48% of my revenue, CreateSpace 13%, Kobo and Apple 11%, Audible now at 8% of revenue, which is double last year's figure. And this is interesting because that doubling of audio, which is primarily Audible and ACX, it reflects my renewed focus on nonfiction audio, which I have found to be the most profitable audio stream, so much so I've stopped doing my fiction in audio at the moment, mainly because a couple of years ago, the fiction audio was great. But then what happened is traditional publishers really started to get in the game. Audible Studios got, you know, ramped up. So there's a lot more choice now for audiobook listeners, and also a lot more professional narrators and a lot more longer books. So I found that nonfiction audiobooks do much better for me in terms of profit margin because they're shorter, they take less money and time to produce, and they still sell. So very cool. So that's the kind of breakdown by vendor. But what I wanted to say was that of my total company income, Amazon companies, so KDP, CreateSpace and Audible are 13% of my total company income. And I have to thank you guys a lot for that because, you know, you guys who buy my courses, you buy direct from my website, you buy, you support me on Patreon, what this, or you buy on other platforms like Kobo and iBooks and other places. Basically, I'm really happy that Amazon can't destroy my business with one fell swoop. Now, you could argue, and in fact, you could argue very successfully, that I would make more money if Amazon was a bigger chunk of my income. But there you go. Back in 2014, and I know many listeners may not have been in the indie world in 2014, but back in 2014, such a long time ago now, there was a big dispute between Hachette and Amazon. Some of you will remember this. And companies who relied on Amazon only found themselves in big trouble. For example, Amazon actually stopped, you know, put a sign up on the book pages and stuff like that. And reporting at the time showed that some publishers had 65% or more of their revenue coming from Amazon. And so I, at that point, so in 2014, Amazon companies were 85% of my company income. And I doubled down on multiple streams of income at that point. As far as I'm concerned, I am an independent creative and I cannot allow one company to control my life. That's just the same as my day job way. So, and look what happened there. I got laid off in the global financial crisis. So for me, I'm actually really pleased that Amazon companies are 13% of my company income. But they are 48, well, more percent. So what is it? 48. Like 60, 70% of my total book sales revenue. Okay, moving to format. This is really interesting. So this year, print is up to 21% of my income. So ebooks are 71%, print 21%, audiobook 8%. This is a big shift. Last year, print was 10%, audiobook was 4%. So we have really shifted. And this is because of a number of things. So I put my backlist on Ingram Spark. I've moved into doing workbooks and large print. And that has really boosted my print sales. So it's more than, basically, I've more than doubled my print revenue percentage and doubled my audiobook revenue percentage. So that's really good, because I think the dependence on ebooks, especially in this market where there's, I mean, there are a lot of ebooks, people. There really are. And it used to be, and I've said this on the podcast before, it used to be that I didn't feel we were in competition with each other. I've always said there's more than enough to go around. But what's interesting is the advertising stuff really is competition. It's about bidding for keywords. So we are in competition with each other for keyword bidding. And what's interesting is that advertising audiobooks and print books is slightly different to advertising ebooks. So this is something I'm definitely focusing on. Obviously, I have this podcast, so I can talk about my audiobooks. So that also helps audiobook sales for non-fiction. I do have, I think I have like 10 or 12 thrillers on audio for JF Penn, but as I said, I've kind of stopped that for now. But really interesting, you get what you focus on, and I've definitely concentrated on expanding print and audiobooks this year. So the breakdown of ebook sales by country, and this is ebook only because it's actually really hard to break down print sales because they're not reported by the place that they're sold to on CreateSpace or KDP Print or Ingram Spark. So you basically can't do that, and you can't do it with audio either. So I can only do it with ebook sales, and it's not entirely granular because a lot of people around the world publish on Amazon.com. So this is kind of a rough breakdown, but essentially it's very similar to last year. 57% of my ebook sales are US, 18% UK, 13% Canada, 7% Australia, and 5% other countries. And that other countries includes sales in 41 separate countries in the last year. And as I've said before, I have sold books in 86 countries now in English. So that is very cool. I think this demonstrates that the growth in digital has not yet kicked in yet. I think the reason why I keep tracking this is because I think there will be a big shift at some point. We've really seen Amazon moving into India and also opening up to the Arabic language. Recently, I've heard mention of Spanish language sales. I mean, that might be in the US, but also Latin America and Europe, obviously. Interesting. I think the growth of streaming internet, reading on cell phones, mobile, that is going to shift. So whether it's 2 years, whether it's 5 years, I do think that that dominance of the US in terms of income will change. Then I do a breakdown of fiction versus nonfiction by store. And this is really interesting because pretty much on Amazon, it reflects the number of just half and half ish. Slightly more nonfiction on Amazon. Apple, Barnes and Noble, and Kobo are 80-90% fiction sales. And this is something I've noticed. It seems very hard to sell nonfiction ebooks on Apple and Kobo. And Barnes & Noble. I mean, it just seems that perhaps because of the digital focus, that it is fiction readers who really double down on ebooks. I've certainly, personally, I read all fiction digitally, and I read nonfiction, both, well, digitally, audio and print. So I'm definitely 100% fiction on digital. But also I have box sets that do really well at Kobo and Apple. So that's interesting. But I also think Kobo, for example, has a lot more promotions for fiction. So that makes up a big thing. And then print is primarily nonfiction. And that's not a surprise to me because nonfiction does very well in print. If you have nonfiction books and you have not done them in print, get them done. Then my breakdown by author name, and Joanna Penn has 55% of the revenue this year. JF Penn has 42% of the revenue, and Penny Appleton, which I co-write with my mum, is 3% of revenue. Now, it's interesting because I was kind of upset about this. But I know why. And this is why it's important to do this. And I think I probably need to do this every quarter. So hear my words. I want to do this every quarter. Oh, goodness. Time passes so quickly. It's hard to do this so regularly. But anyway, so in the last year, Joanna Penn has put out How to Market a Book, Third Edition, The Healthy Writer, and How to Write Nonfiction. JF Penn has only put out Map of Shadows and also one short story. I did spend time writing a screenplay, but that's not saleable. And Penny Appleton, we did three books for Penny Appleton, and it is testament, I think, to how difficult it is to break into a new genre, even with three books and a box set. So, I mean, basically, the time spent on Penny does not warrant the revenue received. And I hope that helps people deciding. In terms of my backlist, I mean, so most of that JF Penn sales, you know, is backlist. I really need to write more fiction. But it's so interesting when I have been very honest about where I have spent my energy in the last year. There's clearly been more of a focus on nonfiction and more of a focus on print, audio backlist, getting products out there. So basically, I need to write more fiction. So let's come on to my thoughts on the results. And I, you know, having a bit of a come to Jesus moment about this. I put out an email this week talking about feeling discombobulated, feeling like I think part of it is coming up to this 10-year mark. Part of it is, how do I want to move forward? I know many of you know some of the more mature indie voices in the space. And when I say mature, I don't mean like we're adults in the room. I just mean we've been around a while. So, for example, the self-publishing podcast boys who have stopped doing their podcast and renamed it as Story Studio Podcast. So they're still podcasting, but they are moving out of authors, you know, helping authors and really moving into focusing on fiction. So that makes me think about what I want to do. Anyway, so I looked at my results and basically came up with the conclusion that my focus is so split between all my multiple streams of income and my different author names. It is very hard for me to maintain, I do maintain consistency. It's just hard for me to ramp up any one of those things without something else having to give. Some people say, oh, you must have a massive team. But no, it's me. Alec, my wonderful VA, Alexandra, who helps with the blog and some social media stuff. Obviously, Jonathan, who does my video formatting and some of the ad stuff. But essentially, I don't have a massive team. It's not like that. So I know that in order to make more money with books, there are some things I should do. So if you want to make more money with books, this is what you should do. Okay. Are you ready? Write under one author name instead of three, which splits your focus. And this obviously has pros and cons, because as we all know, your also boughts will be mixed up if you are writing different books under the same name. And some people think that that is fine. Other people think it's not. I'm very happy with splitting things because of the also boughts, but writing under one author name would help in other ways. Write in one preferably popular genre instead of multiple genres like I do. I write nonfiction, self-help, action adventure thriller, religious conspiracy thriller, crime, dark fantasy, horror, and sweet contemporary romance. I cannot master any of these genres when I'm writing in so many. Obviously, putting out books regularly, especially in a series, preferably in the 90-day window, instead of one book a year in multiple series. Yes, this splits my focus. Cut out some of my many other multiple activities, of which there are many, and be consistent and organized with advertising instead of getting to the end of the month, flinging ads up or just doing ad stacking on launch. So basically, I know what I'm doing wrong. But one of the most important things, I think, is, well, in this creative life in general, and I talked about this with Stephen Pressfield, but it's to know thyself. Okay, so when I read that list, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I'm sure you're thinking that too. Yeah, yeah. Oh, if only I could do that. I know myself. I cannot do one thing. I don't want to do one thing. My creative muse would go crazy. And also, I've always been a combination of JF Penn and Joanna Penn. I definitely have those two sides. I want to be Tony Robbins. I'm not Tony Robbins. I'm the introverted Tony Robbins for my nonfiction. Or someone like Jack Canfield, always been a kind of role model in that self-help space. And then I want to be Stephen King. So I want to be the helpful out there person helping other people change their lives. And I want to be the person writing, books in my dark little corner. So some kind of focus splitting is inevitable for my character type. So what am I going to do? Understanding that I am knowing myself, what can I do to increase book sales revenue in the next year? And so big decisions. First of all, stop writing Penny Appleton. And I think I've mentioned this already, but if you didn't hear about it, so Mum and I have agreed to stop doing Penny Appleton. It's been an interesting experiment, but to be honest, I am not the right editor for her. I am not the right partner for her. She's going to go on with writing under another name, and she will be coming on the podcast soon to talk about it. And I will be going back to my dark little corner. So I will be Joanna Penn and JF Penn. The next thing I'll be doing is Joanna Penn will continue to serve the writer community, you guys, through this podcast, through the blog, through my YouTube channel and my courses, but no more nonfiction books until 2020. So I'm going to give JF Penn like 18 months to really get in there and get on with my fiction. I will be doing more video courses. I actually find doing the video courses much quicker than doing nonfiction books. So I will be updating the older books, but basically my writing time is for JF Penn. I'm currently working on Valley of Dry Bones, Arcane number 10, and then I have the two more books in the Matt Walker series. I have a standalone horror I want to write. There's so much I want to write, so I need to really just focus on it. And the other thing is, in terms of screenwriting, if you've been listening to the show, you know I've been flirting with screenwriting for years, and I do have a couple of draft scripts, but I cannot do screenwriting as well as fiction. I just can't. They are two different skills, and those screenwriters listening will know this. It is a totally different matter. You also need to do marketing as much as you need to write. So, and I'm just not ready to do that. I don't have the bandwidth. So, scripts I will put on the back burner and see what happens over time. But I kind of a little bit sad about that, but I need the time, basically. I will also make more of what I already have. So I'm going to update some of the older books, continue getting the backlist into audio and other print formats. I'm also I said this last year that I was going to get on Google Play, but I didn't. So I'm going to actually get onto Google Play. I'm going to be a better publisher. And PublishDrive has just signed a deal with Chinese ebook distributors. So I will be using them for Google Play and other vendors, and also be looking at licensing rights to foreign markets. So we have something with South Korea going on right now, and who knows. But basically, that is what I am going to do to improve my book sales next year. I don't want another year where I don't grow. That growth for me is like a personal thing. I mean, I feel like it's very important to reflect on how we've done. And it's very tempting when you have a mature business to just coast and go, all right, I'm fine, you know. And there's a difference between working hard and resting at something you love and coasting. And I feel like perhaps I've been coasting a bit. So there you go. I would love to know what you think about that update. So please tweet me or leave a comment on the show notes, or you can, yeah, that would be great. Okay, wow, that was a big one. I hope you found that useful. And just to come back to my writing week, I am 22,000 words into Valley of Dry Bones, getting cover design together, I've also started a new Twitter account for my fiction, which is at JF Penn Writer. So I did have at JF Penn Author back in like 2012, but I lost access to it because the email I registered with was an old address that I lost so I can't get that back. And I've tried to go through the Twitter help and they won't let me have it because my email's different. Which is ridiculous. Well, maybe it's not ridiculous. It's probably just a good security thing. But anyway, so I am now at JF Penn Writer on Twitter, and that will be my kind of dedicated fiction account. And I'm still at The Creative Penn for nonfiction. So this week I am back into dictation, thanks to this interview with Christopher. So hopefully we'll be moving forward with Valley of Dry Bones and really enjoying it, having a laugh and lots of my recent Spain trips in it. And yeah, good fun, lots of good fun. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the show. Just a couple. Richard says, I've recently found your show and been listening intently. Now I'm in my early 40s. I decided it was about time I fulfilled my dream of writing a novel. Yes, it is, Richard. And I am currently a delivery driver in the Scottish Highlands, listening to your podcast while driving. I thought that was awesome. And then they got this other one from Ray, who said, listening on the shores of Lake Awassa in the south of Ethiopia. So from the highlands of Scotland to the shores of Lake Awassa in the south of Ethiopia. That's very cool. Thanks, Ray. Wendy Ledger says of last week's show with Sam about injuries, that was a fascinating interview. We're currently watching DCI Banks and I watched as a poisoned woman passed out on a couch. I'm glad it was not the floor, which is one of those cliches. Sarah Rosette said, so identify with your personal update this week. Glad you sorted things out and thanks for sharing. That I actually sent an email to my list about the discombobulation. That's what that is about. I feel like there's too much to do and not enough time to do it all. So I must pick what I'm good at and what I enjoy and invest my time there. Exactly. And that's why I'm giving you the update again today. Charity Tamaseb says, I so enjoyed the interview this morning during my commute. Fantastic. And Mona Marple says, love listening to the show while enjoying the British summer outdoors. It is still a heat wave here. It really is. And finally, Anne T says, just read your email about your upcoming interview with your mum. Can't wait. Hope she comes with baby pictures. I don't think so, especially this is an audio show. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by my own courses. And right now I have two main courses, how to write a novel and how to write nonfiction. So if you're struggling to get your book written, or if you're drowning in ideas and research and you need a process, or if you're blocked, or if you would like to be part of a private Facebook group with other members, if you'd like a pretty substantive course on either of those things, the courses are video with downloadable slides and workbooks. But if you prefer audio, which many of you do, you can also download the audio and listen. And it is me teaching. The How to Write Nonfiction is not the same as the book at all. It has a lot more. It's probably three times as big as the audio book. And it's me basically teaching. So lots of testimonials on the sales pages, but one which was fantastic from Carol. I love the class, best money I have spent on training yet. And that was for how to write a novel. So you can check out my courses for authors at thecreativepen.com/courses. And I'm going to be adding some more mini courses on money, productivity, content marketing, and some other things. And so if you check out at thecreativepen.com/courses, you'll see what I have available. And yeah, that is going to be the main way that I will be teaching in the next 18 months. And I'm going to be doing those two courses, how to write a novel and how to write nonfiction, are extensive courses. And then I'm going to be doing lots more mini courses and lectures, a bit like Dean and Chris do with WMG, which is awesome. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. I love you guys. You're amazing. Thanks to new patrons, Sue Weston, Anne-Marie Gray, and to Jamie Ferguson and Imogen Clark for upping their pledges. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can give just a couple of dollars a month, support the show. You will get the extra monthly Q&A, audio Q&A, but you'll also get, I'm now adding little extras onto the feed over time. Sent out another one this week. So yeah, there you go. So go to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, that was a big intro. Let's get into the interview with Christopher. Today, I'm here with Christopher Downing. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Joanna. Good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Christopher is the author of Foolproof Dictation, which I actually have right here by my desk, and Foolproof Outline, as well as writing under pen names in new adult romance, science fiction romance, and military sci-fi. He's a full-time dad to three young children and also does online coaching for authors wanting to dictate, which is super useful. So, Christopher, just give us a bit more about your background. How did you get into writing?
Well, I started in elementary school. My biggest award that I've ever won in writing was in fifth grade. I won a district ride writing competition, and then it went downhill for about 20 years. I got back into it as an adult in 2005, and I wrote a couple novels that I tried publishing traditionally that didn't go very well, partly because I didn't know what I was doing yet. And then I entered the indie world in about 2015 when I published my first memoir under my real name, actually, at that time. Mm. So, yeah, that was it. That was it. So I've been writing my whole life, and it took a long time to get there.
Yeah. So why did you want to be a writer? Because you mentioned you're a full-time dad. Is because being a writer is kind of flexible, isn't it?
It is. I mean, there are still some demands on being a writer, especially if we're indie now. It takes up, if you're running your own business, you would know that. You've published a few books on that subject. You know, whether you're doing your marketing or you know, what I've found, what I miss the most is just having creative quiet time. I'm a full-time dad, so I don't get a lot of daydream time. So that's probably the thing that eats into my ability to create the most as a full-time dad is just quiet, creative daydream time. You don't get that a lot, you know, and when you do, it's like 12 o'clock at night, and I'm not much of a night person anymore. So there you have it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We might come back to that later. But we're going to talk about dictation because I've had a couple of authors on the show about dictation, and I've gone through my own dictation journey. And when I found your book, which I think must have come out around the time when I was finding other things not working so well, and I read it and I was like, okay, this is interesting. This sounds more like me. So can you give an overview of the writing session, and then we'll get into the details of different aspects?
Sure. Well, let's see. You know, what I do is I've systematically divided my time up. You know, the first half of my writing session is going to be warming up my brain, revving up my brain. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the language composition parts of our brain that if you're an introvert or you spend a lot of time with children or you don't spend a lot of time talking to yourself all day, and which I think is most people, mm-hmm. When it comes time to dictate, your brain's not ready to go. So what I do is I've systematically created a way to warm up your brain. Mm. That's pretty important. So like, let's say you have a 2-hour window to get some writing in. You know, you'll spend about 10 to 15 minutes reading out loud or doing some free writing, some sort of that activity, just loosey-goosey kind of stuff. And then I've created some exercises. So you spend about 40 minutes working through some exercises to focus specifically on some different kinds of dictation that you might do, whether it's sentence construction or vocabulary work or something like that. And then the second half, once your brain is ready to go, you know, then you dive into your work in progress.
Mm. And I think the big issue that everyone has is you're just talking about spending 40 minutes warming up. And like, isn't that a complete waste of time? Like, if right. Because if people have only, let's say they have half an hour instead of 2 hours, so, and they spend 7.5 minutes of half an hour warming up when they could have written, I don't even know how many words in that long. So why your focus on that warming up and those exercises?
Well, first off, I think that, you know, the bottom line is that experience is the best teacher. If you have a half an hour to write, I promise you that the last 15 minutes of writing will go a lot more, will be much smoother and more pain-free if you spend the first half of it just free writing. And just writing anything. If you just dive into your work in progress, and I know 99% of authors out there have experienced this, if you sit down in front of your laptop and just start writing, it's hard to get going, and it's almost a painful process. The next thing you know, you're searching your email or checking your sales page and that kind of stuff. You're finding the path of least resistance, and this will come up again. We're always going to the path of least resistance, and so it's just easier to get the brain warmed up. So the other thing is, you know, I think the indie world has gone through a phase where we're all trying to write fast, whether we're doing 2K to 10K or 5,000 words per hour or dabbling with dictation. You know, there's just been this movement to write quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think I did it, you know, and it's great. We all learned how to write quickly. But at the same time, I think a lot of us got in the mindset that achieving high words per hour, high words per day, is the ultimate goal. And I've kind of started stepping back from that a little bit and realizing too, and I think a lot of other, and Chris Fox has mentioned this recently, it's time to start focusing on the craft a little bit more too. So if we can get high words per hour and yet at the same time warm up, you know, the craft side of our brain, where we can dictate, let's say, a decent sentence, or a somewhat complicated sentence that's written beautifully or well. Mm. I think that does us all better in the end.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think you're right. And well, then let's circle back to why dictate then, because one of the reasons that many people want to dictate is to go faster. So what mm-hmm. are the reasons that you think people should consider dictation?
Okay, two reasons. One, it is faster, and once you get there, it is faster. I like to use the analogy of if you were writing by hand most of your life, and someone handed you an electric typewriter, and they said, "Work with this for 3 months, and you know, let me know how it goes." And if you didn't have someone there training you, coaching you, encouraging you on a daily basis, you know, after 2 weeks, you would pick the thing up and throw it out the window and say, "Oh, why is Q the first letter? That doesn't make any sense." Right. So, it's the same thing, you know, you got to stick with it. It is faster if you stick with it. And then the other thing, that I think is the biggest bonus of dictation, is that you can enter a creative flow state, without the distractions. I think your inner critic, once you get good at it, your inner critic goes away. You're not worried about editing on the screen. You don't have this computer in front of you. In fact, I dictate away from my computer now. I'll go kind of, Monica Leonel talked about this, her walkie talkies. She'll pack her little bag and, you know, go for a walk and have people stare at her funny. I love that. I do that, except I don't go publicly. I still can't do that. But you know, you get away from the computer, you get away from your distractions. I think that's huge. Here's an example I like to give to people too. There's a website called the Most Dangerous Writing App or the Most Dangerous App. And what it is it's an app where you typing, and you sit down and you set your writing sprint 3, 5, 10, 20 minutes. Hmm. And then the cursor will pop up. And if you slow down your writing, if you stop writing for more than, I think, 5 seconds, the entire text disappears. So it forces you to keep going. Right? It's horrible too. You get 10 minutes into it and then everything just goes away and you're like, what?
There's a slightly nicer version called Write or Die, which starts deleting backwards. Yeah, it starts deleting backwards so you don't lose everything.
It's the same idea, right?
Yeah.
Nerve-wracking. Mm. But where was I going with that? So I would encourage anyone to try that, because there's a kamikaze version of it too, where it actually blocks out what you write. So it prevents you from editing as you type. And that's great too. So if you try something like that and you experience, oh, there's no self-editing as you type, and you realize that you can start typing faster and then you can enter into that creative flow state without editing as you type. And so the point of that being, when you dictate, the same thing happens. You can't edit as you type or as you write, and that forces you to or allows you to enter into that flow state. That's crucial for us as writers.
It does make sense. And well, partly the reason why I really like your book is this cyclical writing idea, which, well, first of all, let's just be clear on that warm up. You are reading, like you have some exercises, but you also encourage people to read books in their genre to kind of get in the mindset, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like before you have an interview with Joanna Penn, you want to warm up your voice so that you wake up at 6 a.m. and you want to warm up your voice before you start talking. I would encourage anyone to read out loud or do free writing. In fact, I'm actually leaning more towards free writing these days. Mm. Just, you know, stream of consciousness writing. Reading out loud is a great way too. It just warms up your mouth. It warms up your breathing. It helps you integrate punctuation into your speaking. Mm-hmm. Also too, when we write with a keyboard, we often use a different set of vocabulary, different sets of sentence construction than we do when we're talking to people or when we're dictating. So the idea is to try to merge those two. So by reading out loud or practicing some free writing, it allows you to sort of delve deep and explore the vocabulary and the sentence constructions that you would use like you would do in writing. Otherwise, when you start dictating, you either have long rambling sentences, you overuse the word and. And is the most frequently word used in my dictation, at least when I was beginning. Or you write a lot of short, choppy sentences, and you know, none of which really work out. So,
yeah, I found that actually the short, choppy sentences, just because I didn't like saying comma a lot,
sure.
Which is funny. But let's now talk about this, the cyclical writing blocks, the 2, 5, 10, 20. Explain that, because I think this is the thing that really makes it a different approach.
Yeah, this speaks to the inner critic and setting expectations. And I'll tell the backstory of how that this started. This is where the foolproof dictation even began. I was reading, was it coffee break? Oh, good. My mouth is getting dry. Also, you need to have a lucky, this is my owl cup. I've had this for 8 years now. You have to have a lucky coffee cup.
Usually when I take a coffee, it's because you're talking.
Oh.
When I'm talking, that's when you have a coffee. little pro tip for everyone listening. Carry on.
Don't edit that out. That was great.
No, exactly. The backstory.
So I was reading Rachel Aaron's 2K to 10K, which most people have read at this point. It's been out for a couple of years. And she talked about one of the sides of her writing triangle is knowing what you're going to write. So she suggested writing a 200 to 500 word summary of your scene before you started writing it. And that was a great piece of advice, whether you're typing or dictating. So I started doing that before I was dictating. And then that translated over to dictation. So I would dictate a small version of the scene, 250 words, and that would be about 2 minutes. And then that was easy. I noticed that was easy. I could do that. Mm-hmm. And that helped clarify a lot of the ideas of the scene, the structure of the scene, where the scene was going. And then I would say, well, let's try to expand that a little bit. Let's pick some of the beats, the scene beats, and try to expand them a little bit, add in some more detail. So then I would go for 5 minutes. And then I would do it mostly from memory, because the things that stuck out in my memory from what I did just the dictation before are usually the important parts. Mm. So I would do it for 5 minutes. And then I would think about that for about 30 seconds and what really hit home and what I'd want to change. And without slowing down too much, I would jump right into 10 minutes. And then after that, I would do about a 20 minute dictation. If you're not entirely flubbing it up, is about, 1,000, about 1800 words. You know, if you're dictating at about 5,000 words per hour, don't do the math and test me on that, but, starting small, gradually increasing a little bit more. And the next thing you know, you're dictating the entire scene. it just feels a lot easier. If you were just to say, even if you were typing, you know, write an 800 word scene, here's a small outline, go, you would probably spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours clunking your way through it. But if someone were to tell you, you know, write it, you know, 200 words and then 700 words, 1,000 words, and then 2,000 words, you could probably do it. Now, if you're typing, the idea of rewriting that much is, thank you. I don't like rewriting when I'm typing. But if you think about it, if you write a scene using the 2, 5, 10, and 20 minute cycles, you've only spent, 40, you can do the math on that one. You get 40 minutes, you know, and you've rewritten a scene 4 times, working it through, developing it, expanding it, working in details. And you've only spent 40 minutes rewriting a scene 4 times. And I think that's worth the time. I mean, I think it's amazing what you can do with that.
Yeah, and I think that's what's interesting. And I had Kevin J. Anderson on the show, and he talked about when you're starting out, just do notes to yourself and thoughts and ideas. Don't try to go from zero to finished draft writing with dictation, like with your first go. And that, like you say, expectations are, oh, I just pick up the device and I start talking and I magically create like a 2,000 word like chapter. And yeah, that just doesn't happen, right? Whereas this is like, okay, 2 minutes, come up with a couple of sentences that are not your finished sentences. They're like just the outline. And as somebody who's not an outliner, that to me just felt much more helpful in terms of getting to the point where I could then dictate the next draft. And just to be clear, what we're talking here with people is we're dictating into a device or the computer, but you're not looking at the screen. So it's and the point is then you could read that into the transcription mode and get it up on the screen if you wanted, but you said Correct. You don't do that anymore.
No, I never did. I think I dabbled with, you know, non-transcription, writing directly onto the screen for about 10 minutes. And I said, this is nuts. Although it was a previous version of Dragon, I still don't do it. It's transcription only. I like to be away from the computer. I carry notes with me. In fact, I'll email my a PDF of my own outline usually, or I'll print them out to my Kindle and keep them with me. But to be honest, at this point in my career, sitting in front of a computer is the least creative environment for me to do any writing. I can't stand it. I can't stand sitting in front of my computer when I'm writing. I would much rather be sitting in front of a 3-ring binder with my printed out outline and dictating. Mm. Honestly, I'm over my computer. I really that's another interview. I'm over it.
Well, no, I we will come back to that in a minute about certain marketing things. But the other thing I was thinking of the cyclical approach is that Dean Wesley Smith, who I'm a huge fan of, talks about writing into the dark, but he also talks about his cyclical approach, which is he might write 1,500 words, but then he'll kind of go back, read through, and maybe add a set. He writes a clean first draft, but he still cycles through that draft. So each line is actually touched, you know, might be a couple of times, and then he kind of works like that. And your transcription method actually feels more like that, which is by the second, even if you don't do it 4 times, if you maybe get it on the third time, you have been through a cycle so that third time is much cleaner than if you just tried to do it once, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for if you're a pantser, which you are,
which
right?
Which I am, yeah.
Good luck with that.
Well, I pretty much am. I know a few tentpole moments and then I pants it.
the scene will grow organically. And whether you use an outline or a small outline or a detailed outline, or you're entirely pantsing, the scene grows organically from your own creativity. And that's what makes it fun. I liked Writing Into the Dark too. I enjoyed that book too. I actually went back and read that after I published Foolproof Outline. So it's kind of like the two extremes, right? But I get it and I love it. You do need to be able to harness the excitement from the creative centers of your brain while you're writing, or otherwise your writing will come across as flat and dull, and the reader will experience that too. And that's not good. Mm. So, you know, letting scenes grow organically, even if you have a small outline or a detailed outline, I think is part of the exciting process of writing.
Yeah. And I should say, she reaches over and gets foolproof outline.
Hello.
Hello. And I don't actually have everyone who comes on the show, I don't have their books in print, but I actually bought yours in print because of the exercises that are in them. I actually find it easier to have them in print. So they're very short books, just so everybody knows. They are not, what you're talking about is not some massive tome that takes forever to kind of understand. What you've done, I think, is break it down into a different way of management, which is great. So just before we talk about the outline, what are some of the excuses? You do this coaching for people who want to dictate, which I think is brilliant, because there's so much, it's mindset, it's all mindset, really. Sure. So what are some of the common issues that people are bringing to you, and how can we get past them?
What's the first one is punctuation, right? Mm-hmm. It's so annoying. But I think that's because people try to add punctuation too soon. I think you need to learn to be able to speak fluently and develop sentence structure, be able to tap into your writing vocabulary before you do punctuation. Punctuation should be the last thing that you fold in. So what is it? I think editing is going to be a huge one. There's accuracy, there's editing. So I'll speak to a few of them briefly. Mm-hmm. Accuracy. If you're speaking, unless you're from East Texas, if you're speaking accurately and slowly with controlled breathing, the new versions of Dictation of Dragon are going to give you a good accuracy no matter what. I think you're going to get close to 95 to 99% accuracy. So the key is to learn how to speak slowly with good breathing and speak articulately. And if you can do that, that really will take care of most of your accuracy problems. And Scott Baker mentions that a lot in his books, his book too. The editing, that website I talked about, the world's most dangerous app or Right to Die that you mentioned. So do that, sit down in the kamikaze mode and where it covers up what you write. And then start, type a small scene or type the story of Little Red Riding Hood out and see how much faster you type. If you can't see what you need to go back and edit, that said, you will see how many mistakes that you make. You make a ton of mistakes if you're not watching what you type on the screen. So what you're doing is you're actually eliminating a huge amount of time that when you go back and correct words as you type, and I know we're not supposed to do it, but we all do it. Mm-hmm. If you see a sentence that doesn't look right, or the punctuation's wrong, or you've misspelled a couple words, or autofill has taken over your world and destroyed it, you're always going back and correcting as you go. So if you were to tell me that I spend too much time after I've transcribed editing all the mistakes or editing things out, well, I would counter that by saying, how much editing do you do as you type? And that editing as you type interferes with the creative flow state that you're trying to achieve as a writer. Mm. So I think the net gain of dictation actually creates less editing in the long run once you get the accuracy in your articulation down. Is that the path of least resistance? As human beings, I don't care what hobby you're taking up or what you do for a living, your brain will often go to the path of least resistance. And if you're good at typing at the keyboard, if you're great at typing at the keyboard, that's only going to make the switch to dictation more difficult. Because as you struggle with dictation, you're going to want to just type it out. It'll go so much faster. And that's where the coaching comes in. And I do believe I'm the only coach out there offering this service. Mm-hmm. It's just someone that can check in with you on a daily basis and give you encouragement. When I was starting to dictate, I wish I had, whether it was a Facebook group or a writing group locally in town where we could get together and give each other daily encouragement, or hold each other accountable to dictating without falling back to the path of least resistance, which is typing.
Yeah. No, that's great, because I think a lot of people have these, and I keep coming back to it. It's so funny. I've been interviewing people on dictation. Monica was like 4 years ago or something, you know, and I've done two novels and some of nonfiction. Oh, we should just say all of this stuff is this the same for nonfiction? Because, of course, you have nonfiction books as well.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you still have to organize your brain before you get started, and you have to learn how to organize your brain on the fly. It's the same thing whether you're nonfiction or fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important. So let's talk about the foolproof outline briefly, because it is something, because you've kind of broken down the dictation, I think you've also done the same with outline, and you use Scrivener for the outline, and you actually have some templates which are fantastic. Now, I use Scrivener, but what one thing people get really confused about is how do you use Scrivener with dictation and outlining? So can you just explain how those things fit together in a process so that people can kind of visualize it, and then of course they can get the books if they want more detail?
Well, the thing with Scrivener is what's great about Scrivener is that you can use it however you want to. There's no right or wrong way to use Scrivener. For me, it's an organizational tool. I can only speak how I do it. It's an organizational tool. I use it for my outlining, and I organize my scenes. I have questionnaires, over off on the side that I use for my brainstorming. In the end, I don't write directly to Scrivener. I don't anymore now that I'm dictating well. I will dictate into my. I do have this, by the way. I just want to show up. This is my little buddy right here. This is my little recorder. I used to use a voice app on my phone, but this is the way to go.
Tell us what it is, because everyone's like now know what's to know what it is.
Oh well, I'll send you a link if that's all right too. It's a Sony. Model, sure, that's a big number.
Yeah.
it's a Sony. And I use this little splitter here. This is my Logitech headset that I bought 4 years ago for $15. Mm-hmm. It does have a noise cancellation boom. I think I've seen your setup. You have a very nice setup, right? You have a pretty fantastic mic, don't you?
Well, for podcasting, but for the for dictation, I just have a little Sony. But we'll put the link to your setup in the show notes. But yeah, sure. Carry on with how Scrivener works. Mm.
So Scrivener. So I use it for organizing. I'll use it for organizing my work, organizing my questionnaires and outlines. What I do now is I will often print my outline out, print my questionnaires out, put them in a 3D binder, leave the computer behind. If I need to, I'll get a hotel room for $99 a night or something like that, or go to the library, find a study room. And without the computer there, I'll just use my paper notes and my dictation. And then when I transcribe through Dragon, and that will usually pump it into, I use a rich text document. I don't use Word. Word tends to get, there's just a couple variables with Word that I don't like to use with transcription. So I'll just use a rich text document and then just simply cut and paste it over into Scrivener. So I don't write into Scrivener. I just use it for organization.
Yeah, exactly. And I do as well. I think this is really important. Do not try and dictate with Dragon into Scrivener or Word, because things just go really wrong, don't they?
They do. Especially if you're dictating live without using transcription. I mean, how many times have you looked up and an entire paragraph is just gone and you're like, what?
Or it's stuck on something it's stuck doing like repeating a word or yeah. So that's just a real tip. Like keep it simple, dictate, and then sure. You put the file in. I do the same thing, but just to wind it back on the outline, do you type your outline into Scrivener or do you do your outlining with dictation and then put the outline in that way as well?
Pen and paper. I will actually print out. I will print out my outline and my questionnaires that I talk about in the foolproof outline. Mm. I print them out now, put them in a 3-ring binder, and I'll sit on the couch and just use a pen and paper. And I just like doing that. It takes me to a creative space, and maybe that was comfortable for me 20 years ago. But like I said, sitting on the computer just doesn't feel creative to me anymore. So I don't like doing that. So I use pen and paper to outline and brainstorm.
Okay, cool. So you write stuff down. Right, yeah. So you write stuff down by hand and then you type into Scrivener the things that you wrote down and then you print out what you've typed and then you take that and you dictate from that kind of outline.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. So it's a bit of everything, really. But the point is the long actual finished text is dictated and then you edit. Presumably, do you hand edit on a printed final draft or something? I mean, you know, manuscript?
No, I'll edit. I'll edit in Scrivener. I'll use the keyboard when I edit because my fingers are so fast when it comes to editing, you know, selecting and cutting and kind of cutting and pasting and moving text around and right-clicking to open up the thesaurus, that kind of thing. It works so much faster on the keyboard. You know, one point I do want to make to everybody is we are talking about a first draft. Mm. When I dictate, I would never dictate anything beyond a first draft. I'm not that good yet. I'm not sure anyone is that good yet. I think eliminating the expectations of a quality draft when you're dictating makes things easier. So we're talking about a first draft, and sometimes if I'm dictating and I catch myself using small clunky sentences or run-on sentences, it's going to happen. But you just roll with it, and you got to trust your editing process. You know, I'll edit. I mean, like most of us, I'll probably edit. Well, unless you're Wesley, then you don't edit much in the end. But I mean, I'll edit something, you know, three or four passes before I think it's close to finished. We are talking about dictating a first draft.
Yeah, I think that's really important too. Okay, so let's come on to the privacy thing because you manage all these different pen names. Now, I say manage pen names because, you know, I manage three different pen names. I have websites, I have email lists, I have social media. I do all these different things for all my pen names. Now, explain how you do pen names and how you also do the privacy thing and the no social media thing. And how do you, why and how do you do all of that?
Two things. Well, it's half of it's necessity. I'm a full-time dad. I don't have time for social media. I detest social media anyways, but even if I didn't, I don't have time for that. It's just like, I don't have time for, much marketing. I think I've found, you know, so much what the return on marketing, isn't that great. So you spend 90% of your time and you get like a 10% return or whatever, something like that. So I found, you know, just focus on what little time you have. If you just focus on writing good books, a bunch of them, you know, I think that's where the payoff is. I just don't have time for marketing. I don't have time for Facebook. I don't have time to allow my brain to get sucked into, you know, checking notifications so often. So, I do have what, four pen names. Who knows, next month it'll be five. That just came from, well, the first time was I was writing romance, and there is a rumor out there that male romance writers don't do as well as female romance writers. And it's true.
Okay.
I chose a female pen name for romance. But then I was in Facebook at that time, and then I was caught in this dilemma of, well, do I create this fake persona or do I just have a pen name and just let it go? Because creating a fake persona where I'm interacting with readers, which I caught myself doing, seems like fraud. That didn't feel right at all because they thought they were talking to a woman and I was pretending to be a woman. And I was like, this is not right. This isn't good. So I shut that all down. I was like, eject. So I shut that down. So I use pen names, but I don't use them to create a social media presence. I don't create a false persona. It's just a pen name. It's all there is to it. I actually do have a male pen name that I do for new adult romance too. And there's a small enthusiastic readership that doesn't feel comfortable either. So I need to create a barrier there. And I also have three kids, and I have I'm happily married with three kids, and we're not afraid of the outside world. It's just nice when you have this little protected environment. I use a fake address for my mailing lists, that kind of thing. I just don't want anyone, you know, it's like when you receive a 1-star review, you know, it's like, they don't just tell you how bad your book is. They tell you how bad of a person you are, you know, and I just don't want that in my life. So I've chosen to not do that. So that's why I use not only pen names, but I just don't want that in my life.
And again, I know everyone's going, oh, Well, how does he sell any books? And because we're keeping your pen name secret, we can't like point to your books. But sure. Can you give us a number of how many books you have out there? Because I think you said, you know, you have to have more than like three books, right, to market by writing.
Yeah, no, I have 10 full-length books, and then I dabble a lot in short romance stories too, which is just sort of a fun hobby I have. It's, I almost feel like it's a little bit different than my writing career. Yeah, it's just, you know, you there's different ways that you can market outside of social media. I mean, I still use paid advertising through Amazon, which once you start getting keywords down, it does pay off. You know, I do rely heavily on the also bots. I almost bought that one.
That would be a different list.
But, no thanks. You know, and I did dabble with the money suck Facebook advertising there for a little bit, and I lost a ton of money over a 6-month period, and I just found other ways to do it. So, you know, I still say the best way to market a book is to put the, you know, series. I always write in series. Is to put the at the very end, put the sales link to the next book in the series at the, and on the last page in the back matter of your book. And if they like the first book, they're going to buy the second book. And you can't convince somebody just through marketing and buzzwords to buy a book. If they like your book, they're going to buy it. If they don't buy it, well, then you should probably start rethinking on how you wrote the book in the first place. So that's the biggest payoff. You know, the temptation there, of course, is to do a pre-order, which I've done in the past and made that mistake, is to put a pre-order in the back matter of a book. I would encourage everyone to never, ever, ever do that because that creates a sense of pressure that you don't want in your life. But that's how I do it. That's it. That's my secret. I put the sales page on the back matter of a book for the next book in the series, and then let it roll, and then just use some advertising to try to get in people's also bots.
Right. Okay. It's interesting because I know quite a few authors who do this approach, and it definitely suits you know, people who are focusing on the writing first. And also with pen names, I totally agree with you. It's very difficult to do all the different types of marketing like I do under my own name. I can do lots of things because it's me and I don't have to hide that. But romance, I agree with you, can be particularly difficult. So I get that. It's a good recommendation. And you said you were on Facebook and then you wound it back. Did you ever do any of the other social media?
Oh, I did. I did Twitter for a little bit. And you know, Twitter did great. I met some great connections. While I was doing work on male depression and advocacy work for men with mental illness at that time. So that I built a lot of really great connections when I wrote my first memoir. Mm-hmm. And that's under my regular name. People can find that. The great psychologist, Stephen Hanley, who wrote the foreword, I met him through Twitter. So I'm not a total Luddite. You know, I think there's some benefits, but I think the net gain, there's not really a net gain when it comes to social media. That's just my personal opinion. So it was honestly, it was the 2016 American presidential election that just caused me to just debail. It just really showed me like how negative this place can be. So that was when I bailed.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And I think there's a lot of people who are tired of social, whatever political side of the spectrum they are on, it has become very argumentative and opinionated and things. So my kind of method is to just mute and block and, you know, mark as spam and just loads of methods for cutting out the noise. So I think if people listening are attracted to what you've done, but feel like they're way deep, like I am. Yeah, there are ways that you can control that noise without giving it up completely. And one really good thing is the digital fast, obviously, when you just give it up for like a week and then you might calm down. But I love what you've done. I think it's really interesting. Okay, so we're out of time, but tell people where they can find you and your books and that we can talk about and your dictation coaching online.
Sure. Right now I'm coach.me. I provide, it's affordable coaching for people who want to learn dictation. It's $15 a month. We dabble into all sorts of writing. The best thing is about it is just someone who's going to hold you accountable to using your dictation and not falling back on the keyboard too much. I offer different packages for beginning writers and professional writers. So anyone who's published plenty of books but has trouble with dictation, I have some ideas for them too. You know, the only place you can really find me is on my Amazon homepage. So it's Christopher Downing. Well, I don't know whatever that is, but you can search for me there on Amazon, and that's where I am.
Brilliant.
Otherwise, I'm hiding in a cave in Colorado.
Oh, Colorado. Now we know. Yeah. Oh, no, that's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Christopher. That was great.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Christopher today, and hopefully you might be inspired to try dictation or give it another go if you gave up. I keep trying, you know, getting back into transcription, then moving away, then moving back to it. And I'm back into it right now. So I'm loving it. It definitely bypasses the critical voice. And in fact, as I record this, I'm about to head to a co-working space where I've booked a room in order to do dictation and then transcription as per what we talked about. I also do have my own lesson on dictation in my multimedia courses on writing a novel and nonfiction. You can check them out at thecreativepen.com/courses. So next week, I have a fantastic interview with Julie Huss and Jonathan McLean, and they are talking about tips for taking your books to Hollywood, and very exciting interview. And it really helped me make that decision about giving up on screenwriting for now, because the lessons learned for me were quite profound in terms of just focusing on becoming a better writer, building a body of work and attracting opportunity. That is a fantastic interview. I know you're going to love it, and have a wonderful writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.